Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of From My Point of View. Playoffs moving on, Eastern and Western Conference Finals, a rematch of the Heat and Celtics, Lakers and Nuggets, the same final four teams from the NBA bubble year. So people who somehow use that against LeBron and the Lakers being like, oh, it was the bubble, you're out of luck because the same teams with the same players basically are back in those positions. Knicks going out with a bit of a whimper. It was a huge opportunity to win Game 6 in Miami, send it back to the Garden for Game 7, and no one really showed up except Jalen Brunson, who has just been an absolute dog all season. We'll talk more about the Knicks, maybe what their future might look like, who to move on to, Julius Randle. I'm not going to rag on Randle too much. I think he has been a sensational player all year. He just hasn't been able to perform in the playoffs. And honestly, I think that's enough. You know, we've seen enough. And this was not even just like the first round against the Hawks. This was two rounds where he got a little... He played okay against Cleveland and then got banged up. And then in Miami, he just was not really playing particularly well outside of Game 5, where he didn't even shoot well in Game 5. He just went to the free throw line a bunch. But it's not for a lack of trying. You know, it's just some things that go on with him. We'll talk about that. LeBron taking out Golden State. The Suns firing Monty Williams, which I think is a huge mistake. But we gotta look into that. Joel Embiid, questionable post-game, Game 7 quotes that he had to the media. Very questionable about him and James Harden not being able to win by themselves because it's a 5-on-5 sport. Very questionable quotes there. I'm not sure what he was thinking with that. All NBA team selections, and of course, Ja Morant being a fool. And the NFL schedule. So we'll start with the NFL schedule, Ja Morant, and then moving forward. NFL schedule releases with the Giants specifically. So there's a couple big ones. You have the Jets and Dolphins playing on Black Friday is a significant one. The Jets open up against Monday Night Football against the Buffalo Bills. So a big time division rivalry opening up right there. It's 9/11 anniversary. I think the 22nd year. It's going to be at MetLife. So an important day in New York, an important game for Aaron Rodgers and the Jets, obviously coming out with a week one Monday Night Football win against the divisional favorite, the still divisional favorite Buffalo Bills, would be huge for them. So a big night there. Giants, they open up against Dallas. And then week 16, I believe it is, they play the Philadelphia Eagles on Christmas, which is brutal. I don't like that. I do not like that. As much as I love the Giants and I love the moves they've been making, I think the roster definitely is better this year than last year already with the draft picks that we've had and you know, some of the signings. We got Dexter Lawrence locked down for the next 4 years. So they've been making moves. I like where we're at, but I still think there's a sizable gap between the Giants and the Eagles in terms of just roster, for sure. Unless Daniel Jones makes an unbelievable leap here in his pocket passing, you know, just being able to throw more touchdowns, really. But that's a scary matchup, week 16. I'm sure it'll have playoff implications if both teams go, everything goes according to schedule for both teams. That'll have playoff implications, divisional standing implications, I'm sure. Giants, back to, you know, I think they opened up against Dallas like 5 years in a row, and then last year they didn't. But yeah, a lot of Dallas week one, always a problem. I actually really like that. I think that Zeke was someone, even though Zeke gave him, you know, people gave Zeke a lot of crap over the past couple years, but he always torched the Giants. You know, Tony Pollard's going to be a very important running back in that role. I'm definitely going to try and snag him in fantasy football. But he's going to be electric. and he's going to be tough to stop. But Zeke, there was something about Zeke against the Giants, and Dak, really. Dak, too, always performed against the Giants. That's frustrating when they play each other. The NFC East and the AFC East play each other this year. So I believe it's October 29th. It's week 8, October 29th. The Giants and Jets play each other at a 1 p.m. game. That's going to be very exciting. I'm going to try and get to that game. Me and my friends, I have a lot of Jets fans that are friends and Giants fans. So we're going to try and, you know, pool together and go to that game. I'm sure it'll be electric. I haven't been to a football game in I don't know how long, man. Football is really a sport that it doesn't really interest me to go to football games. I would much rather watch all the games at once on my couch than go to one game in an enormous stadium where the field is relatively small compared to the size of the stadium. So that would be my first football game in years. Again, I couldn't even tell you when I last time I went to a football game. I must have been an early teenager, like 14, 15, if I had to guess. Well over 10 years since I've been to an NFL game. But that would be super fun to go to, of course, obviously Giants and Jets. So the AFC and NFC East playing each other this year. The NFC East last year, very, very good. Three teams making the playoffs with the Dallas Cowboys, the Eagles, and the Giants. And then the AFC East projected to be very, very good this year as well with the Bills, the Jets now with Aaron Rodgers, and the Dolphins, ideally with a healthy Tua Tagovailoa, should be very, very competitive as well. They got Jalen Ramsey now on defense. That division is going to be a bloodbath. And then who am I missing? This is so bad, but who am I missing? Oh, the Patriots. The Patriots, that's where we're at right now. The Patriots are kind of just unforgettable. For the first time in a long time, the Patriots are on the total back burner of this division. The Dolphins, Jets, and Bills all have clear higher expectations than whatever the New England Patriots are going to trot out. I wouldn't completely count them out. They could easily steal a couple wins there against these teams. And like their divisional record might not be that bad at the end of the year. But generally speaking, I don't think many people expect much from the Patriots this year. But everyone else does. Like the Dolphins are loaded and it really just depends on Tua's health. Rodgers and the Jets, huge, you know, their defense is still elite. And now you add in a top-tier quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, high expectations for them, like championship bust or bust expectations for them. And the Bills as well, obviously, they've been, you know, incredible the past several seasons, but just haven't been able to get over that hump that is the Kansas City Chiefs and Cincinnati Bengals. They're like the third team. They're right there, though. As for the rest of the NFL, I like this list from Yahoo Sports. It's not necessarily the 10 best games, but it's the 10 most intriguing games that fans, you know, who follow storylines and things like that, of that nature. What 10 games people might be interested in. Number 10, Houston Texans at Carolina Panthers, week 8, number 1 and number 2 pick. The top two quarterbacks, Bryce Young on the Panthers and CJ Stroud on the Texans. Obviously, they also drafted Will Anderson Jr. inside the top 5. But that's just a good old-fashioned rookie versus rookie, pick one versus pick two. Who's better? I would say completely blinded right now. This is week 8, so I think we'll have a much better, you know, we'll have a good sample size in terms of who's looks better than who at that point in the season. But strictly speaking on roster, I would say that the Panthers probably have a tad bit better of a roster than the Texans, but I really like what the Texans have going on right now. I think they had a good draft, so that'll be an interesting matchup. Week 9, we touched on this already, the Jets and Giants. Week 8, Dolphins, number 8. Week 1, Dolphins, Chargers, and that goes back. Same thing happened last year. I think it was a Sunday night game or Thursday night game? It was one of those primetime games at night, but it was Dolphins at the Chargers, Tua versus Justin Herbert. Same exact thing. It's going to be the same narrative with Stroud and Bryce Young. That kind of back-to-back picks, who's better, who's playing better, whatever it is. That's Dolphins and Chargers. That's week one. One of the Thanksgiving games, Packers, Lions. Obviously, the Lions and Packers always play on Thanksgiving. Or the Lions always play on Thanksgiving. I don't think the Packers always play on Thanksgiving. It's the Lions and Cowboys. But the Packers, Jordan Love, front and center on Thanksgiving against a Lions team that I think a lot of people are high on. So I'm pulling for the Lions. I want them to play well. I love Jahmyr Gibbs. They took him a little too high, but I love him. By this time, this is week 12. So Thanksgiving, like Jameson Williams will be back and have at least six games if he stays healthy, six games under his belt by that time. So he should be all good and warmed up and caught up to the rest of the team by then. So I like that. Jordan Love, Thanksgiving, first year as a starter. Week six, touched on this already, is, I keep saying week six. Number six is week one, Bills and Jets. Talked about that. Week nine, Bills and Bengals, a rematch. Bills at the Bengals specifically. So that is a rematch, obviously, of things that are scary because this is the same matchup that happened in Cincinnati. DeMar Hamlin will most likely be on that field. I'm sure it'll be pretty scary for him at first to be on that field again after everything that happened there. Heavy emotions, heavy memories between both sides. So that'll be an emotional matchup. This is number four, is a tie. Both Eagles and Cowboys matchups. Week 9 and week 14. 3, 49ers at Eagles. That is a rematch of the NFC Championship game. Niners, they got some things to answer with quarterback. Obviously, Brock Purdy is hurt with his elbow. Trey Lance is trying to make a comeback here to see if he can re-secure his starting spot. But their roster is still loaded. And as is the Eagles. You know, a lot of people complain like, oh, well, if our quarterback didn't go down, we would have won that game. They'll have a chance to prove it here. We'll see. Number two, Bengals at Chiefs, week 17. Of course, this is one of the last games of the year, and the Bengals and Chiefs in their rematch, always fun to watch. And then number one, they have week 11, Eagles-Chiefs, which is a Super Bowl rematch. So for obvious reasons, that will be a very highly anticipated game. So that's the NFL schedule. Before we move on, quick reminder, if you signed up to Underdog Fantasy using promo code Animal House, you get 100% match deposit up to $100. It's quick, it's easy. The link is in the description of this podcast. It'll take you to our link tree on Animal House, and you can go from there. It'll help you download the app, put the promo code in for you already. Takes a couple seconds, and it means a lot to us. So once again, sign up to Underdog Fantasy using promo code Animal House for 100% match deposit up to $100. Let's go into the All-NBA teams. So the All-NBA teams were released prior to the games. This was May 10th, so 5 days ago as I'm recording this. All-NBA first team, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, my little baby boy. A lot of my guys are thriving. I wish Devin Booker made one of these three teams. He didn't. I think mostly just because he was injured. It should be noted that next year, it's strictly the best 15 players in the league. Obviously, there'll still be snubs, and there'll still be guys that, you know, people look around and say, well, he definitely deserved to make it, or he definitely deserved to make it. There will always be snubs, no matter how you construct it, but it is no longer two guards, two forwards, two center, or one center, and then that's how it goes for the first, second, and third team. So, like this year, for example, Giannis, Embiid, and Jokic would have all been first team All-NBA. But because there's only two forwards and a center and one center slot, Giannis and Embiid, who won the MVP, were first team. And Jokic was, even though he finished second in MVP voting, had to sit in the second team All-NBA. Happened to Embiid the past couple years as well. He should have been first team All-NBA. He wasn't because there's only one center spot and it went to Jokic, who was the MVP. Also should be noted, a lot of guys on this list would not make the cut next year because there's a minimum of, I can't remember if it's 60 or 65 games, but one of the two. I think it's 60. You have to play a minimum of 60 games to be included on accolades like MVP, you know, DPOY, most improved, all NBA selections, all defensive selections. You have to play a minimum of 60 games. So a lot of these guys would not qualify. But this year they do. So all those changes happen next year, which I'm sure we'll see a lot of other guys fighting through injuries to get to those all-NBA teams if they're on the cusp of the game amount of games played qualification. Because if you make an all-NBA team for a lot of guys, that's a lot of roster implications, and we'll get into that with Ja Morant. First team, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, my boy, he made it. Luka Doncic, Jason Tatum, Embiid, and Giannis are the five guys for the first team. All-NBA second team, Steph Curry, Donovan Mitchell, Jaylen Brown, Jimmy Butler, Nikola Jokic. All-NBA third team, Damian Lillard, De'Aaron Fox, Julius Randle, LeBron James, Domantas Sabonis. Couple of things. Donovan Mitchell was upset he didn't make first team. I don't necessarily disagree with him. He probably should have made All-NBA first team over Luka Doncic. Doncic probably should have made second team. If winning doesn't matter, then what are we doing? Like, this is a regular season award. I understand it is an individual accolade in terms of your individual performances, but there's no reason, like, team winning, your play directly impacting your team winning means something in the NBA. Because unlike any other sport, one player in the NBA can dramatically shift the course of a franchise or its winning percentages, you know? And Luka being a phenomenal player but just not being able to win basketball games, what you can blame it on his team, you can blame it on his coach, but that should reflect on him as well, because he's considered probably a top five player in the league talent-wise, but to miss the playoffs entirely, and him and Donovan Mitchell, it's not like their stats were that different. Donovan Mitchell had an incredible year, and his team was a top five team in the East, which was a better, if you go top down, record-wise, the East was much more difficult than the West. You know, you had teams in the West making it into the play-in at 500. That wasn't really happening in the East. You know, so I get his gripe there. I would say that's pretty. Luka Doncic is really, and Donovan Mitchell, I would switch. Those are probably the two that have the most critiques, I would say. SGA, absolutely. Tatum, sure. Giannis, Embiid, yes. Jokic obviously gets the short end of the stick there because he was the runner-up in MVP. So much like Embiid the last 2 years, he gets it this year. Curry, Jaylen Brown. Jaylen Brown was the one who was worried he might not make an All-NBA team because he would not be eligible for a Supermax contract from Boston. I'm kind of hoping he just doesn't take it and leaves anyway, but it's a lot of money to leave on the table, and it's a lot of money that only Boston can offer him. So he'll probably sign with the Celtics, unfortunately. I was trying to manifest him to the Knicks after next season, but we'll see. Jimmy Butler, yes. Jokic, yes, of course. And Curry, All-NBA third team. Feels weird that Damian Lillard is on this list just because he really did not play that many games this year. He was injured for a majority of the year. I don't know. What'd he play? Played in 58 games this year. I guess that's enough. Obviously, that doesn't count this year, but he averaged 32 a game in 58 games this year. I thought he played a little bit less, but truth be told, I'm not sure who would go in over Lillard. I would imagine it was Ja Morant was the one who would be in over Damian Lillard, but Lillard, De'Aaron Fox, absolutely. LeBron, Sabonis, yes, of course. AD missed too many games. Julius Randle loved it, right? Third team All-NBA for the second time. Now, here's the thing with some of this. We're talking about All-NBA. Let's talk about Ja Morant, because Ja Morant missed the entire month of March after posting. He's on Instagram Live. He shows he has a gun in a strip club. He flashes a gun. Gets him in a lot of hot water with Adam Silver, the league, the Grizzlies. He's suspended. He goes to, quote-unquote, rehabilitation. He has a sit-down interview with Jalen Rose talking about how he knows he has to be a better person. He knows he has to be more responsible. He knows he has to do all these things, yada, yada, yada. Misses a month of the season. Doesn't get listed on an All-NBA team. His contract extension is now $40 million less than it would have been if he made an All-NBA team this year. So his extension doesn't kick up more money. I think it's instead of being worth like $230 million, it's $190 or something like that. It's a lot of money. It's $40 million. And if you don't think that the reason he was suspended or the reason why he missed games matters to voters, then you're not paying attention. It would have been different if he suffered a tough injury. Maybe he would have been able, you know, obviously because the Trailblazers weren't good and the Grizzlies were the number two seed. If he just gets injured and he comes back, starts playing well, maybe, you know, voters, they overlook that and they say, hey, I think Ja Morant still deserves All-NBA recognition over someone like Damian Lillard, who he didn't play over 60 games. His team wasn't good, but he did have the individual stats. Ja Morant, I mean, you look at Ja Morant's stats, it's hard to say that he wasn't All-NBA caliber. He averaged 26 points a game, 6 rebounds, 8 assists. His team was the number 2 seed. You know, he was an all-star for the second straight year. He played in 61 games. Only 3 more than Damian Lillard, but he was out for 3 weeks from like March 2nd to the 20-something or whatever it was. If he played in all those games, now suddenly you're hovering around 70 games played. It's a big difference. And, of course, the nature of which he missed those games was from suspension for being stupid in a strip club. Voters look at that and they take that into consideration to say, okay, well, give it to Damian Lillard. And that cost Ja Morant $40 million. And I think a lot of people kind of understood, you know, the sit-down interview with Jalen Rose was really scripted. It was painted in a way for Ja Morant to be apologetic for his dumb actions, but also give him a strike. You know, they kind of hung him out there and been like, this is a no-go. You can't do this. Not just to Ja Morant, but to the entire league. You can't do this. They suspended him. He went through the whole quote-unquote rehab thing about, you know, management or whatever. Watch who you keep around you and keep in your company. Watch your own actions and what you do. Don't embarrass your team, the owner, and the league. Don't shine a bad light on them. Not 2 months later. 2 months! On a different friend's IG Live, with only about 110 people following on the live, he flashes a gun in an SUV. And his friend snapped the phone away so quick. He could not have snapped the phone away quicker from Ja Morant when he realized he pulled out a real gun. And someone found, like someone was capped it, screen recorded, whatever it was. And it went viral. The Grizzlies suspended him indefinitely. And now there are very heavy talks that the fact that he will probably be suspended for 20-something games, maybe even more, to start the next season. Because this is his second violation and Adam Silver went out and he said, you can't do this. You gotta clean it up, you know? And this isn't even, he's hanging with crews, a crew that is like carrying around guns and stuff and doing stuff like that. Although they seemingly were, because they, you know, this is the same people he was hanging around with that got in trouble for pointing lasers at the Indiana team bus. These are it's the same crew. He's hanging around with the same people. Now people have turned on Ja Morant because now they're like, you're a moron. You're a flat out idiot. Because you're costing yourself money and you're getting suspended. You're set up to be the face of the league. Nike dropped Kyrie Irving and they signed Ja Morant to be a signature athlete. And now that's looking like a really bad decision because he's making bonehead decisions. He's making dumb mistakes. And you could say, oh, he's only 23. He's just a kid. He has a daughter. He has a daughter. He's not just a kid. Okay? He is a grown man who took it upon himself to have a child and is also a part of a much larger multi-billion dollar corporation that he needs to act accordingly. And I saw some discourse on like TikTok and Twitter about how, you know, Second Amendment, right to bear arms, having a gun isn't illegal necessarily. And it's not about that at all. The NBA is a private employer. He is employed by the Memphis Grizzlies and even more so the NBA. Not only that, he is someone who is supremely talented and kind of propped up by the NBA to promote their league. He is one of those very few and rare players that gets that privilege of being promoted by the NBA to be a face of the league. They do not want their guys who they like to market, guys who they believe are future faces of the league, they don't want you showing guns on Instagram, because guns equate to violence. That's what you think of when you see a gun. You equate it to violence. And that's what it's like. It is not the same situation. If he owns guns, if he has guns, perfectly fine, but you cannot be putting them out on Instagram Live. And not only is it a bad look that the NBA wants to avoid, it puts himself in danger. If you're walking around acting like a gangster, showing guns on social media, being like, ah, I'm about that life. Eventually someone who is, the big fear here that people want to avoid at all costs is that someone who is really about that life is going to press up on Ja Morant and something terrible might happen, okay? That the safety, the individual safety of Ja Morant, his family, his friends, he puts them in direct jeopardy by doing shit like this. It's not okay, man. It is not okay. And he is, I don't know what it is. You know, there are people all around saying, well, you know, he grew up privileged. He always wanted to be a gangster, but he wasn't because he grew up in a good environment, basically raised to be a basketball player. Whereas you always see it as the opposite. A lot of gangbangers are gangsters because there isn't another way out. They want to be hoopers. They want to be rappers, but they're not. And I say that because those are very popular paths out of urban areas, underprivileged areas. But they just don't have the talent. And this is the best way to survive in their unfortunate circumstances. Ja Morant, on the other hand, is envious of like the respect maybe that they gain and the notoriety that they have. And he wants that. Even though everyone looks at him and it's like, you're the breadwinner, bro. You are the way out. This is like all your friends and you have family that is like, you're a multimillionaire now. And you might be, you know, there might be a lot of people that you have to hook up. There might be a lot of people that you got to take care of. And now you're jeopardizing not only your future, but you're kind of messing it up for people that are close to you, you know? Not that's necessarily fair to pin that, oh, the, you know, the future and the successes of friends and family on one dude like that. But a lot of times, that's how it works. You know, Ja Morant and his family were, from my understanding, okay growing up. There weren't a whole lot of problems. A lot of people seem to say that, where he didn't grow up in that kind of environment, but always clearly kind of envied it. And he's lashing out. And you don't like 23 years old, bro. You have a child. You are not a kid anymore. You are an adult. So the whole, well, he's only 23 years old and he makes mistakes thing doesn't fly here. I brought it up last time we talked about this a couple months ago. Carmelo Anthony. When he was younger, he was in the league. He was hanging out with some maybe not so good guys, some shady characters. David Stern told him, you can't be doing this anymore. Drop them. Like, I know where you're at. I know who you stay with. I know where you sleep, bro. Like, you need to fix it. And Melo said the NBA. Like, he's like, that's how I knew the NBA were the ops. Like, they were the feds. Not ops. They were the feds. And it's a funny story, but like it, Melo had a little bit of a reputation like that, maybe being hanging with like shady guys, being a kind of a gangster like that. And he changed up his image real quick. You know, Gilbert Arenas talks about how him and, what is it, Crittenton, Javaris Crittenton, they brought the guns into the locker room. David Stern strong-armed him. He said, you're going to take this 50-game suspension or I'm going to take all your money. And that's in response to what happened with the guns in the locker room. And Gilbert said, well, I don't really have a choice, do I? So he took the 50-game suspension and was like, see y'all next year. Like, that was it. He was out. Adam Silver, got to make an example. You have to make an example of him. There are harsh punishments when it comes to the drug policy. Now it's a little bit more lenient because, you know, a lot of NBA players used to get in trouble for smoking weed. Now that doesn't matter anymore. So that's a good thing. But domestic violence, DUIs, whatever kind of law that you break, those have punishments. Ja Morant is not necessarily breaking any laws here, but he is defacing the image of the NBA and the Grizzlies and himself by doing something so reckless as to show a gun on Instagram Live when not 2 months ago he was specifically told, don't do this again. I'm sure he signed legal documents by the Grizzlies and the NBA, basically promising, I won't do this again. I'll be on my best behavior, yada, yada, yada. And here he is. Not only was he showing a gun, he's dancing on top of his car, kind of wilding out. I don't know if he was messed up or whatever, but dancing on top of his car, whipped out a gun, basically out of nowhere. Like, he didn't have it. His friend kind of threw up the finger guns thing as a, whatever, joking around. And then he panned back to Ja Morant, who had a real gun, and that's when he snapped the phone away. So, it's a whole big mess. It is obviously a huge issue. Ja Morant cost himself a ton of money, but it is now, like from several sources, likely a lengthy suspension is likely for the Grizzlies star. And there is literally no one to blame but himself. He deleted his Instagram, he deleted his Twitter, yet now he has a friend who goes on IG Live, which first of all should be a big no-no. Ja Morant should know right there and then, hey, no Instagram Live, we don't want to risk it, right? He should know. He should know that. He goes on Instagram Live anyway. There's not even 150 people in this Instagram Live, and he makes a dumb decision to do that again. I don't know if it's an act of defiance, if it's an act of like, oh, not that many people are watching, I won't get caught, let me flex my shit right now. I don't know what's going through this kid's head. This man's head, because he's not a kid. I remember that. He's not a kid. This grown man, 23 years old. I understand you're young, but you're not a kid. I don't know what's going through his head. I have no idea. But clearly, some questionable decision-making is going on here. Find a new circle. You know, Obviously, we kind of knew that the whole, oh, I've changed and I'm going to adapt and learn to be better. All of that happened within like 10 days, which we know was not like legit. But you kind of say, okay, he did it. He said the statement. He did the shtick. Give him another chance. He made a mistake. He'll be fine. Nope. 2 months later, we're back in the same spot. So lengthy suspension incoming. It's gonna be anywhere. Season's 82 games. Gonna be anywhere from a quarter to half the season. 40 games, 25 games, 30 games, somewhere. I would say anywhere between 25 and 40 games you can look at. You have to send a message to the rest of the league. Not that the rest of the league is doing stuff like this. At least on camera, no one is doing it like this. But behind the scenes, you don't really know what's going on. So just to make people a little bit more afraid that they might lose it all doing shit like this, you gotta send a message. Gotta send a message. And there's no one to blame but Ja Morant. It's not like he's going on Instagram Live and he has people around him flexing guns. He is the one holding it. He's holding the gun on these Instagram Lives. He is choosing to flash the gun on Instagram Lives. One is his Instagram, the other one was his friend's. But still, you're still making the same mistake. It clearly learned nothing. Clearly. So now he's in deep shit, and he has to deal with the consequences. I don't particularly feel bad for him. You know, this is a very, very avoidable thing that he just chose to simply ignore. All right, as for the rest of the NBA playoffs, let's get into the most recent one. Game 7, Boston Sixers, Jason Tatum breaking Steph Curry's record for Game 7 points with 51. Curry just said it the previous round against the Kings with 50. Tatum had 51. Outstanding game in Game 7. He went from basically 6 or 5 quarters of horrific basketball to the last 5 quarters of game, the last quarter, last really 5 minutes of Game 6 and the entirety of Game 7 just on an absolute heater. He shot 5 of 21 in Game 6, but hit 3 three-pointers in like the final 3 minutes to give the Celtics a close to double-digit lead, and the Celtics eventually won that game. So he was horrific throughout the entire game, could not hit a shot. He racked up some rebounds and assists, so he wasn't complete liability, obviously, and playing defense, so he was still present in the game. He wasn't completely a non-factor, just couldn't score. Jaylen Brown and the rest of, you know, Marcus Smart, the rest of the Celtics, they kept it close the entire game, and then at the end, Tatum, of course, shows up, bang, 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 3 threes, and gives the Celtics a lead that they would not relinquish. Sixers, a huge missed opportunity to win Game 6, go to the Eastern Conference Finals, and you had a feeling that they just were not going to be able to pull it out in Game 7, and they didn't. Harden and Embiid both were horrible. Doc Rivers, not great either. So just more of the same for the Philadelphia 76ers, unable to get out of the first round of the playoffs. Really, really tough for them. Tatum had 51 on 17 of 28, 6 of 10 from 3. Jaylen Brown had 25. Brogdon had 12 off the bench, and that was basically the big amount of scoring there for the Celtics. For the Sixers, 5 of 18 from Embiid, 15 points. 3 of 11 from Harden, 1 of 5 from 3, 9 points. 5 of 12 from Maxey, he had 17 points. Tobias Harris, 7 of 13, 19 points. He was 1 of 7 from 3. No contributions off the bench. It was horrible. Horrible, horrible Game 7 for the Philadelphia 76ers. But I think what's even more abhorrent and what's even more bit of a head-scratcher is after the game, Embiid had this to say.
You can't win alone. I can't win alone. Me and James, we just can't win alone. You know, that's why basketball is played 5-on-5. So, you know, we just need everybody to just, you know, try to keep finding ways to get better. And, you know, we'll be fine.
That's from CBS Sports. Damian Lillard actually quote tweeted and said, huh? With a question mark. He's just as confused as everyone else. Like, tone deaf response from Joel Embiid to sit there and say, you know, we can't win alone. You're a great team. You and James Harden did not show up in Game 6 and 7. Now, for some reason, Embiid shot the ball once with 4 minutes left in the game. Did not touch the ball for the last 4 minutes of Game 6. No idea what that was about. Feed the MVP. I don't know why he didn't get any touches like that. But just to be so tone deaf to say me and James can't win alone, to throw your teammates under the bus like that is not great. And then almost in like a mocking manner, because he got his MVP, so he doesn't care anymore, right? Almost in like a mocking way, he said, you know, someone said like a week ago or a couple weeks ago, there's steps to success, which is, and he was smiling saying that. So he's obviously quoting Giannis, but Giannis is a champion. Giannis knows what it takes. The Sixers haven't been out of the second round of the playoffs since this all started, since the process and Embiid and Harden and all that. They can't get out of the second round. So it just felt like I'm not like a Philly guy, obviously, but if my star player, like if it was almost how I got pissed off with Julius Randle when he said after the Game 5 loss, I guess they just wanted it more. That pissed me off. That was infuriating to hear. It felt like he was, you know, spitting in our faces saying something like that. And for Embiid to sit there and be like, me and James can't win alone, and that he's throwing his teammates under the bus, and then to smile and be like, there's steps to success, knowing that it's like, it's not even remotely the same situation between the Bucks and the Sixers. It's not at all. So to be like that is, it's just a slap in the face, handled really poorly. I don't know if, like, he cares about winning. He just wanted an MVP. I don't know what's going through his head. All I do know is that the Sixers are royally screwed. Royally. Because they don't have, like, Harden. If I'm Harden, I'm leaving. It's clear this isn't working out. I don't know. I feel like James Harden's time in Philly's probably done. How do you replace him? Like, Embiid's not enough, obviously. He's wrong in saying that after the game. But this, it's not like he was alone here, right? James Harden had a terrific, he had two unbelievable games and then completely shit the bed in game 6 and 7. Embiid didn't play much better. So I just, the future of this team is looking real bad unless they can score, you know, a couple guys in free agency, maybe trade for someone, I don't know. But they're not looking great. They are not looking great. LeBron and the Lakers beat the Warriors in 6 games, just as foretold. So I was right about this series. I was wrong about the Knicks, but I was right about this series. LeBron, 39-9 in the closeout game against the Warriors. And there's a lot of talk about, you know, the LeBron dynasty outlasted the Warrior dynasty, which I love that narrative. I wouldn't necessarily say the Warriors dynasty is dead, because back in like 2018, 2019, people were saying the Warriors dynasty is dead, and then they won a championship last year. So I wouldn't say it's dead yet, but they definitely have some questions that they have to address going into this upcoming season. Because after next year, Draymond's unrestricted, Klay is unrestricted, then you have, you know, Wiggins, I think, has an option or team option maybe at the end of next year, something like that. So they have a lot of question marks coming up and a lot of decisions that have to be made with a lot of key guys for that team. And they're not getting any younger. So that's really the big question, is like, do you lock these guys in, keep the core? I would personally like to see Steph, Klay, and Draymond all play for the Warriors for their entire careers and then retire. It kind of feels like almost San Antonio Spurs-esque, where Tim Duncan and Ginobili, you know, they retired as San Antonio Spurs. Tony Parker went and played for like the Hornets for a year, which felt really disgusting. I didn't like that, although Tony Parker, not really as nice of a guy as the rest of the Warriors guys, but they deserve to play together and retire together. So do you give them like that legacy contract, give them some money, still try and compete? Again, Klay had some really horrible performance. I mean, he had one good game in this series against the Lakers. One. He hit like 8 threes, and the Warriors won that game. But the rest, he was not particularly good. Draymond obviously fits really, really well in that Warriors system. How well does he do in a new system with new players that he doesn't have as much familiarity and chemistry with playing as, especially now that his offensive game is basically non-existent? And people forget, back in 2015, 2016, even 2017, he could still score. You know, he wasn't a complete liability. It was around 2019 that he basically stopped being any type of offensive weapon, could not shoot at all. And he's not really like that anymore, you know? But because he's played with Steph and Klay and a lot of and under Steve Kerr for so long, and he knows the offense so well, he just knows where everyone's going to be. He knows his role. He knows how to perfectly execute it. So he is still really good and a really big key to the Warriors. If he were to go somewhere else, how does that translate? If we're being completely honest here, Draymond's on the chopping block first. If it comes down to who you're keeping between, obviously Steph is never leaving, but if you're, who you're keeping between Klay, Draymond, Wiggins, it's Draymond. Draymond's out first. Wiggins is very talented, and he's worked with the Warriors really well there, and he's still very young. Not very young, but he's, you know, 28, 27, 28. So he's still got several years left, obviously, if he plays it right. Klay, second best shooter of all time. That's Steph's running mate, right? That's like the president and the VP. That's Klay Thompson. So, unfortunately, Draymond's going to be the one that might have to take either a pay cut if he wants to stay, or if he wants like as much money as he could possibly get, he'll probably have to go somewhere else. So, a lot of question marks for that team moving forward. I think they all deserve to be together and to retire together, but unfortunately, that's not always how sports work. Not always a fairy tale ending. For the Lakers, they looked great. I mean, they just executed on all cylinders. LeBron has, you could tell LeBron has been playing like conservatively. And then when games like game six pop up, he's like, all right, I'm gonna turn it up. And he scored 39-9. Like vintage LeBron, dominated at will, got whatever he wanted, and they blew the Warriors out. And you could tell he's been doing that all playoffs, where it's like when he has to turn it up, he'll turn it up. But he's really, really pacing himself. And the Lakers are still winning. Like, everyone is contributing. Austin Reeves is every bit as good as we think he is. It's not just like some fluke from the regular season, because the playoffs has a way of like weeding out whether guys can actually play or not. Cough, cough, Jordan Poole. Even though Jordan Poole was sensational last year, he was not good in the playoffs, the entire playoffs this year. But Austin Reeves has been spectacular all playoffs, really, really good. Anthony Davis, even though he doesn't have to score 30 a night, like he scored 17 points in that blowout game, but he had 20 rebounds. You know, he is playing by far the best defense out of any person in the playoffs, from round one to now. He is the best defensive player on the court the entire playoffs. He has been. So, and the Lakers have had the best. They remain the team, the highest team remaining with the highest defensive rating left in the playoffs as well. So they're playing great team defense. They have the best defender on the floor. LeBron can just kind of assert himself whenever he needs to. And when he doesn't have to score the basketball, he's rebounding and running the offense, making great passes. D'Angelo Russell, Austin Reeves, Rui Hachimura have all been big contributors. Jared Vanderbilt's an excellent defender, as always. That's what they need from him. They just, their rotation, everyone is contributing. Everyone's playing, clicking on all cylinders. This matchup is a lot different from the last Lakers-Nuggets matchup in the bubble. It's going to be tough. I think Jokic is going to have a really hard time with Anthony Davis. Because if you really look at it, Jokic is a sensational offensive player. Anthony Davis is the best defender in the playoffs right now. But Jokic is not a very good defender. And Anthony Davis is a very good offensive player when he needs to be. And when he can be. When he gets it going, when the shots are falling, when the middies are falling, the post fades are falling, the hooks are falling, like, there's nothing stopping this dude. So the fact that Jokic maybe isn't a great defender and has gotten into foul trouble in these playoffs a couple times, he's going to have his hands full with Anthony Davis. It's going to be very, very difficult. And then you just, everyone in the Lakers has good defensive capabilities, mostly. I think this series favors the Lakers. Like, I think, just with all due respect to Jokic, just because they're playing so well, Lakers in seven, maybe six, though. Like, they have a formula. They won the first round, the second round the same way. Split on the road, split the first two games on the road, sweep at home, lose game five, and then win game six at home again. That's the same formula. Split 1-1, win two straight, go up 3-1, lose game five, win game six. You're advancing. That's kind of how feels like how it's going for them. It's like a formula. They got it down to a science. And they're rocking with it. Like, they're performing when they have to. So, I like the Lakers in this matchup, if not strictly based on Anthony Davis or Nikola Jokic. Who am I taking? I'm going to take a guy who is very capable offensively in Anthony Davis and who is by far the best defender in the playoffs right now against a guy who is unbelievable offensively but leaves things to be desired defensively with Jokic. And I understand he showed up. He can score with the best of them, but like, he hasn't played someone like Anthony Davis in a playoff series. Okay? Who was the last center he played against the Suns? DeAndre Ayton. Soft. Softest center in the league. Like, did not want it at all. Wanted no smoke with Jokic. And who they play in round one? The Timberwolves, who, you know, Kat's not stopping Jokic, and neither is Rudy Gobert. Sorry. And that Nuggets team just simply outclassed the Timberwolves on every single level. So that's a bit different, too. Obviously, the gap in talent as you get deeper into the playoffs shrinks. So the Lakers and Nuggets, both really well-constructed teams, but I think in the end, it has and always probably will come down to Anthony Davis, honestly. Like, LeBron is like that, and he makes it go, but if Anthony Davis is completely a non-factor, the Lakers will lose every game. They need him, and I think he shows up big time against Jokic, for sure, and against the Nuggets. Speaking of the Suns, after losing in six to the Nuggets, Matt Ishiba, the new owner of the Suns, fires Monty Williams. And then on top of that, it is reported DeAndre Ayton trades are, quote, being heavily explored. Now, this is the thing. I remember I made a TikTok like months ago talking about it's weird that the Suns matched that offer sheet from the Pacers because it felt like after losing to the Mavericks last year, DeAndre Ayton was fed up. He had horrible, piss-poor body language. He kind of butted heads with Monty Williams. They didn't seem like they were getting along. Monty Williams said they haven't spoken. Like, when training camp started at the beginning of the season, Monty Williams was like, we haven't spoken. So that relationship clearly soured. I think Devin Booker was caught on camera on the sideline asking Ayton, do you even want to win? So Booker, I think, is fed up with him. KD's only been there for a hot minute, but I'm sure he got a very sour first impression from playing with DeAndre Ayton. So Ayton is gone. They should have let him walk, use that money elsewhere to sign some other key role players and depth, because then they probably would have had extra depth after they traded for Kevin Durant. Now, you have Durant, you have Booker. Chris Paul, I think, probably needs to go as well, unfortunately, but he needs to go. Just a complete liability. So you need to build, because sometimes Booker gets nicked up, but he's playing probably 65 to 70 games a year. Durant hasn't played over like 55 games in the past 4 years. Or I think he's averaging like 50 games played in a season over the last 4 years. And then Chris Paul gets banged up a lot too, because he's older. So you have guys that maybe aren't always going to be 100% healthy, and you don't have a lot of depth. You need to figure it out, and you need to figure it out quickly. Otherwise, you're going to waste Booker, and you're going to waste having Kevin Durant. Clearly, depth in the rotation played a factor in their series loss against the Nuggets, because you were riding Durant and Booker for 40-plus minutes a night and basically just hoping that they scored a combined 70-plus points each. That was the only thing you could do. And that was the only chance you had of winning, because that's exactly what happened when they won the two games in the series that they had. Booker and Durant both popped off for like 30, 35 plus each. It's you can't rely on that. And especially through the course of 82 games where you're not going to be able to play them every single game. They're not always going to be available. They're going to get injured. It happens. It's part of the game, and it just is what it is. If you don't have them, like, if you don't add the proper pieces to this rotation and to this team, there's a chance you might not even make the playoffs if things go completely like off the rails injury-wise and everyone misses significant time. Then you're screwed, like royally, royally screwed. So they have to figure it out and they have to add some pieces. Ideally, you get DeAndre Ayton, a good package of role players, maybe a couple picks for DeAndre Ayton, and that is asking a lot. I think maybe you can squeeze out a first-round pick from someone and a couple of role players for a team that has, you know, they can expend that and are willing to, like, add DeAndre Ayton. Because Ayton is talented. He's just, like, not super reliable defensively. And he's clearly needs a change of scenery. So I think maybe that'll help his motor issue. Because with the Suns, he clocked out. He wanted no business playing for or with this team in that series against Denver. It was very apparent. It was pathetic, actually. So the Suns, very, very important offseason coming up for them. Maybe the most important offseason in franchise history, if I'm being frank. Okay, now for the sad stuff to wrap up the pod, the last thing we'll speak of, the New York Knicks. The Knicks fall to the Miami Heat in 6 games. Once again, it sets up a rematch, Eastern Conference Finals rematch between the Heat and Celtics. Disappointing, obviously. Game 6 was very winnable. The Knicks, early in the game, were up by 15. Miami pulled it close, then they ended up winning at the end. Less than a minute left. After everything great that he's done, it was not right. It was not right that the season ended this way. But less than a minute left, down by 2, Knicks with the ball, and Brunson turned it over. He turned it over, trying to make a pass in the paint, and it was intercepted by the Heat. And then it was just the foul game. Knicks tried to make shots, they couldn't, and the Heat ended up holding on for the win. But just that being the play that kind of sealed the fate of the Knicks and ending the season, having it be a Brunson turnover is just all kinds of wrong and all kinds of just evil. Like, whoever's writing the scripts, I don't make that joke a lot because I think it's cliche and it's kind of played out, but whoever's writing the scripts, that was mean. That was really mean to make the fact that Jalen Brunson was going to have the play that kind of ended the Knicks season be a turnover from him after everything he's done, because he's the only one that showed up in game 6. Him and Quentin Grimes played all 48 minutes of game 5. Brunson had 41 points. He was sensational. And in game 6, more of the same for him. In the game 5 win, he had 38 points and in 48 minutes. And then in the game 6 loss, he had 41 points. And he played 45 minutes. So he sat for all but 3 minutes of the game. Everyone else was horrible. Julius Randle was 3 of 14, 1 of 7 from 3. He had 15 points and 11 rebounds. RJ Barrett has been, outside of the first 2 games in Cleveland, he has been very, very good and very, very reliable. And in game 6, he no-showed. 1 of 10 from the field, 11 points, racked up 5 fouls. No one else showed up. No one else showed up. Grimes had 3 points. Robinson, I mean, in 29 minutes, he only had 11 rebounds and 2 points. Julius Randle, 36 minutes, 15 points, 11 rebounds. Horrible shooting splits. Again, RJ had 11 on horrible shooting. Toppin went 2 of 5 with 7 points. Hartenstein had 2 points, 1 rebound in 18 minutes. Josh Hart, he tried his best, but racked up 5 fouls. He had 11 points, 7 rebounds on 5 of 10 shooting. And the Heat had Jimmy Butler at Adebayo, and then Kyle Lowry and Max Strus were really the focal points of the offense, and they're the ones who were able to deliver. And the Heat won 96-92 to take the series victory. I think with the Knicks, what's really frustrating, obviously, is just the playoff play of Julius Randle. Julius Randle, the past two of the past 3 years, he's been all NBA third team. A couple years ago, Knicks make the playoffs. First round against the Hawks, he struggles mightily. RJ Barrett doesn't play much better either. The Knicks' leading scorer during that series was Derrick Rose. They get bounced in the first round, but the future's looking bright. Everything goes downhill. Next year, Randle's playing awful. His attitude is horrendous. And we're like, oh boy, what the hell's going on? This year, Randle plays great again. All NBA third team. Get to the playoffs. he's a no-show. Gets a little bit injured, but it's okay because Jalen Brunson's here. RJ Barrett starts to play well. Josh Hart is a good addition. The Knicks, Mitchell Robinson dominates Jared Allen and Evan Mobley in the first round. Knicks win in six. Great. Now on to the Heat. Randle misses game one with his ankle injury, comes back, doesn't shoot well. All series does not shoot well. And it's apparent, especially in game three, I think it was, in Miami, the effort disappears for Julius Randle. That is the biggest critique you can make of him, maybe of any player, is their effort diminishes when they are no longer an offensive, a viable offensive option. And that's what happens with Julius Randle. He can drive, he can get to the hoop and try and draw fouls and get to the free throw line only so many times. But when his jump shot isn't falling, when he can't hit three-pointers, when he's not hitting those post-mid-ranges, he takes himself out of the game. Like, his effort and defense falls off a cliff. He doesn't get back in transition. He doesn't make hustle plays. He's not closing out on screens when he's, you know, when he has to make a switch and fight through a screen. He's not fighting through. He doesn't communicate because he's trying to hand off he's trying to hand off ball handlers that he's guarding, and then the other guys get through, and he completely misses his defensive rotation, his assignments. He's just not playing well. Everything, when he is not scoring the basketball, everything else gets really, really bad. And that is something that when a guy in the playoffs is struggling basically the entire playoffs, he's essentially a complete non-option. He's borderline unplayable. This year he was, and even against the Hawks, he was not playing well, but they didn't have any other options. Maybe just that was a fluke. Now it's not a fluke. All right? This is the second time, and it's the third playoff series where Julius Randle just has not been very good. And it's not even that he's not scoring. Again, it's because of the effort. If he just played hard, effort, top effort, it'd be okay. But this isn't how the Knicks want it to go, obviously. So I would definitely explore trading Julius Randle for pieces, draft picks if you can get them. He's definitely viable for another team. He's not a bad basketball player. It's just that he needs to kind of get it. With the playoffs come around, something happens. Some guys made for the playoffs, some maybe aren't. And maybe Randle's one of those guys. I don't know, but he's a sensational regular season player, just hasn't been good in the playoffs. But the one thing that is abundantly clear is that Jalen Brunson is a star. He is, dare I say, a superstar, bordering it. Like, he is the one sensational player, shows up in big moments, carries the team on his back. Spoelstra even said post-game, like, I don't understand how he's not an all-star or all-NBA because He's like, I threw everything at him and he would beat us. Like, there's no defense that the Heat showed that was able to contain and stop Jalen Brunson. But everyone else, yeah, they struggled. So Jalen Brunson is a true leader on this team already in his first year, established himself as the guy that they can build around and they can fill roles with. And RJ Barrett, funny conversation to be had. Out of the top three, I understand there are other good players in this draft, but out of the top three picks of Zion, Ja Morant, and RJ Barrett, RJ Barrett's making out the best out of all of them. He has made the deep playoff run, or the deepest playoff run. Zion barely plays because he's injury prone, and Ja Morant's an idiot, and he's throwing away his future. So RJ Barrett seems to be the most healthy and stable of the three, and could turn out to have the most solid career out of all of them. Maybe doesn't have the most upside, but he might end up being the most solid out of all of them. So happy to see that. I wish he continued. I mean, obviously, if RJ plays as well as he was playing the past several games, in game six, the Knicks probably win if he doesn't shoot 1 for 10. So him kind of selling out there, that hurt. That sucked to see. But I think the Knicks are in good spot. They just need an extra piece. I was trying to manifest Jaylen Brown But now that he made an All-NBA team, like I said, he'll probably get that Supermax from the Celtics, and he'll probably sign it unless he is truly done with that team and that franchise, which we'll see. I mean, at the end of the day, it's his decision, but I'd be hard-pressed to be convinced that he's going to just leave all that money on the table. But regardless, the Knicks got to find someone, whether it be it through free agency or a trade for Randall. I would explore the options to trade him for sure. Unfortunately, it sucks to say that, but it is what it is. Also, those Knicks fans, I saw a video of Knicks fans tearing down like the poster of Randall where they have like, it's like the line of posters with different action shots of every player. You're losers. Like to say that about Julius, to say, you know, Julius Randle didn't deliver in the playoffs is one thing. To, you know, be like, fuck Julius Randle and fuck him, fuck that, blah, blah, blah. Tear down posters of him in MSG and stomp on them. Like, you guys are losers. You're losers. And no Knicks fan likes you. Like, that's childish shit. That's disgusting behavior. And it's stupid. As Knicks fans, I mean, I don't claim them as Knicks fans. They're losers. They don't know basketball. They don't actually care about their team. They just, you know, jump on the crazy bandwagon when the Knicks are good. But they're bums. They're bums. I didn't like that. I didn't like care for that and like seeing that at all. For sure, that's not right. But you can obviously you can critique him all you want. He deserves it. You know, he didn't play well, and that's what happens when you don't play well. People will get on you, but is what it is. Just gotta find a way to make this team better because there's a solid core right now, which is the first time in a long time hasn't really been a thing. So to have that in place officially, that gotta ride the wave. Gotta be able to set themselves up for success in the future moving forward. Because Jalen Brunson's only 26, which is crazy. He's young. He's very young. So is RJ. So good core. I mean, Julius isn't even 30, but you know he's gotta figure it out more so, I think. You can run it back with him another year, but definitely see if maybe some trade options are on the table for sure. That'd be malpractice to not at least try, you know? All right, that'll do it for this episode from my point of view. Thank you all very much for listening. I appreciate you as always. NBA playoffs, we didn't even talk about the Cup, Stanley Cup playoffs, but shout out to the Maple Leafs. Thank you all very much for listening. I appreciate you as always. And I'll talk to you next Tuesday. I did not get to see Guardians of the Galaxy, by the way, which I know I'm sorry about. I didn't get to see it this week. I mean, last week, hopefully this week I get to it, but I heard it's great. I'll get there. You know, first Marvel movie that's been giving good reviews in a while, so I'm happy. I'll get there. I will get there. Built a home and watched it burn. I didn't wanna leave you, I didn't wanna lie. Stop.